Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 7th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in our good friend Stephanie Lund, events coordinator, and Sarah Wheeler, community health worker, with our Southwood County YMCA. Looking forward to talking with both of them. Right now, we have with us on the phone Wisconsin State Representative Scott Crew. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, James. How
are
you doing?
Doing all right. We record this in the morning, so it's afternoon by now. Happy afternoon, everybody. We'll get that out of the way.
It is a hard habit to break. I apologize.
About a year from now, I will probably start remembering and getting it right. Scott, how was your fourth?
That's awesome, man. I have to tell you, it's my favorite day of the year, right? And it's nice that it was kind of a Tuesday thing for the 4th, because that means there was stuff Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So it was kind of cool to have those 4 days of the independence celebration going on. So it was fun to get around everywhere.
It was nice to be able to enjoy the holiday a little bit. And then really, I kind of feel like it was not an easy week, but it was a little bit easier to ride into the week with this and everything.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's nice to get that midsummer break here, and all the days are finally getting shorter, and people start thinking about getting back to school in a month or two here. It's just kind of nice to have that big, long weekend in the middle of all of it, and everybody's getting back to their relaxing and having fun for a few more months, and we're right back to the grind again.
Scott, I'd like to start off. We're going to talk about the budget and housing and some other things, but I think this kind of opening just leads into some of that. Recently, you introduced a bill that you've been working on for a while, AB 266, now known as the 2023 Wisconsin Act 16. Can we talk about this a little bit to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the bigger bills I think we'll get done this session is So Act 16 is part of our overall housing bill, and one of the challenges we've been having with workforce housing is when developers come into communities and set a project in front of a community, there have been circumstances, not necessarily here, but in other parts of the state, where municipalities say, yeah, those were the rules when you brought us the project, but we're going to change those rules now and make you do this, 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 and this, which drives up the cost of development through the roof. And when cost of development goes through the roof, it's not like a developer and investor just eat that cost. It gets passed on to the homeowner, to the renter, to anybody who's going to be the end consumer of that product you're creating. So that's one of the things we've been seeing with pricing being so high for housing, with one of the problems we see with rents being so high, is it just costs developers so dang much to put in a new subdivision or a new house or whatever it might be. So Act 16 basically says, hey, developers, if you want to come into a municipality and develop a project and we have rules laid out for it already, whatever project you bring to us under the current rules, we have to approve it. I mean, we can't just change rules midstream anymore. We've got to give some of these folks some certainty to keep these costs down and get these projects moving, because I'll tell you, we're probably at a 60-year low for our housing inventories right now, and it's just costing people an arm and a leg just to find anything decent to move into.
So with this action, because to me, we once a month we have a Let's Talk Real Estate, and when we talk with our friends at Cole Banker, and I've been doing this for 4 or 5 years, maybe even a little longer, and for years the common theme is we don't have enough inventory.
Yeah.
The other I would say right under that is workers to be able to build these houses.
Well, and that's finally the thing that's changed nicely over the last, I'd say, 6 to 9 months, is we finally have, you know, developers and contractors who are getting some of that time freed up. We're finally seeing all of those prices for all those supplies coming down from the COVID highs. So, you know, a regular piece of OSB sheeting is back to normal pricing for flooring, and for drywall being back to normal pricing for walls. And so we're finally getting to the point where supplies are good, workforce is getting better, but now we don't have developers wanting to come into our communities because they just don't know what the rules are going to be when they get there to put a project on the doorstep. So I think, you know, that triangle of housing is absolutely right, and our friends at Coldwell know it all too well, is that, you know, when you can finally get the perfect storm here and get something put together, especially adding in one-time money from the state with the other 5 housing bills that are out there, that we can finally inject some money to, you know, bring this market back to stability, I think that's a great thing for everybody. I think the bigger challenge, even with our workforce housing, is that we don't have the capability for seniors to make the choice to downsize because there's just nowhere for them to go that's affordable. So if they're looking to sell a 3-bedroom, 2-bath to get into something 2-bed, 1-bath, they'll make a mint on selling their house, but they're just going to put it right back into buying a house because there's so low inventories right now that prices are ridiculous. So it's been great to see this bipartisan effort from the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor all get on board to put this $550 million into various avenues of housing options and opportunities for everybody in the state of Wisconsin. And I think we'll see more of this session even.
Scott, I wanted to get into the budget. Governor Evers recently signed this bipartisan budget. We've heard a lot about it, conversation. Where you fall on this and how are you feeling about it?
Well, you know, for the most part, the budget that we do every other year is about 75% of the work that the legislature will get done over a biennium. So, I mean, it is a behemoth of a task. So we started basically last October asking for input and, you know, finally getting all this put together and crafted and across the finish line. So I'm glad it's done on time. And I'm glad there were very few vetoes on the governor's part. I wish some of the Democrat friends that we have would have voted for the bill, but they didn't, which doesn't much matter because it got passed and signed. My concern is a couple of those vetoes were tough to swallow. But, you know, for the most part, it's a 95% good thing in my eyes. I think the 400-year provision that he created with his pen, I think, was a little out of school on how, you know, governors should operate with their veto pen. But, you know, legislatures will go back and adjust those things over the course of the next 2 years and 4 years. And if anybody doesn't know, the provision I'm talking about is where the governor crossed out a couple of numbers and a hyphen to basically extend levy ability for schools for 400 years. With the veto pen that wasn't in the original budget. So that'll get problematic down the road if the legislature doesn't deal with it. But like I said, every 2 years, the legislature can go back and adjust. Every session, we get a chance to do bills. So it's, on the whole, it is a good thing. It's massive amounts of money for shared revenue for all municipalities. It's funding for the housing things we talked about. It's historic funding for education. And for my district in particular, the biggest thing in the budget has always been transportation, and this budget finally hits the number on the head, I think, because we've got we went a little above and beyond where the governor asked us to on transportation because I wanted to specifically try to carve out some money for A Street repairs that we've been talking about for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. So we got $15 million extra in the state highway rehab program. And in the budget, you can't necessarily say this money goes directly for this project, but we've made it pretty clear to DOT going into this that we were going to try to get some extra money to get some of this ACE stuff moved up, you know, because it's not on the books until 2028. So I think we'll finally get some headway there, get that done a little bit earlier. And I think overall the budget is actually a good bill for all of us in Wisconsin.
What are some other highlights to you from the budget, Scott?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I think is, you know, that I wanted to really kind of delve into a little bit was, you know, public safety. And we talk a lot about how we've got problems in our prisons. We've got 50% vacancy rates with our correctional officers because we don't pay them enough. We don't value our DAs and public defenders enough to help keep people the ability to have a speedy trial under the U.S. Constitution. So this budget really invests in all of it. It makes sure that public defenders and DAs and ADAs are getting paid closer to what the private sector would pay them so we can keep them in our process here in the public realm. And it also makes sure that we give our correctional workers, because I've got a huge correctional worker population on the east side of my district in Wautoma to Red Granite. It gives them a $13 per hour raise off the bat because we see such massive, massive holes in coverage, and we're cruising for a bruising if we don't get some more people involved and interested in corrections here in the state of Wisconsin. So I think that's the one that you'll probably hear the least about that probably is going to have the biggest impact is the investment into the criminal justice system from top to bottom, whether it's police and first responders all the way to DAs and prosecutors and on the back end correctional staff is probably the biggest thing you're not going to hear about in this budget.
Was there anything in the budget regarding childcare?
There is, and that was one of the things that people talk about a lot is, you know, during COVID, the federal government sent a ton of money to the states to do some childcare things, and the big conjecture in this budget was, well, the legislature didn't keep the program that the governor created with the federal money. Well, you know, sometimes when federal money runs out, we can't. And that's the problem with one-time federal money. You don't go creating programs with one-time money if you want the program to continue. But this budget still invests another $100 million into childcare. It changes the eligibility for people to receive the subsidy from 133% of the poverty line to 200% of the federal poverty line, which expands options for people to receive a subsidy. It invests in facilities. It invests in finding money for slots for kids in our communities. So I think the big conjecture out there is that just because the federal program dollars ran out is that we didn't invest anything into child care, which was ridiculous on its face because there's an extra $100 million in there for child care subsidies for our workforce to stay back into the workplace. So I'm excited that we got something in there. We've still got plenty of time in this budget to keep going through and expand on this revolving loan fund that we did, that the governor actually did a partial veto to turn that revolving loan fund we did for child care centers into a grant program. So there's $15 million coming back for grants for facilities as well. So I think there's a lot of, you know, misnomer out there on what was actually done with child care.
When it as far as, you know, anything that could happen develop as you were touching on there in the future or even in this cycle, are you seeing things or are there things being talked about with you and your colleagues that could be on the rise, could be in the future?
Yeah, and one of the biggest things is one of the bills I've been working on for about 4 or 5 years now is this fiscal cliff bill that would help kind of solve some of these problems we have with people wanting to develop their skills and abilities and add hours to their weekly work totals that wouldn't affect their child care subsidies or wouldn't affect their food share number or wouldn't affect their W-2 numbers, to help them stay more into the workforce and take more opportunities. Because right now, if you go to Quick Trip or Walmart or Walgreens or CVS, and you know now they're starting at $12.50 to $15 an hour, and say you worked 20 hours a week and you received a certain number of child care subsidies and food share subsidies based on that 20 hours a week that you had, and your boss says, hey, love your work. We want you to come back here and work 40 hours a week next week into the rest of your time with us. You have to make a choice at this point. Mm. Now you say, well, is it worth me losing my child care subsidy or my food share to work those extra hours this week? Or, you know, what do I do? So the bill that we've got out there would lessen that problematic choice to say, okay, for the first 6 months of your new opportunity, we're going to give you a chance to save and plan and budget while you're coming down off of your benefits instead of just ending them immediately, because too many people are forced with this ridiculous choice of not being able to work just to be able to still afford to take care of their family. So I think that fiscal cliff bill will help on the child care side of things as well. And make sure that people still have those options available. I'm looking forward to that going this fall, too.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Wisconsin Assembly District 72 Representative Scott Krug. Scott and I have been doing this a while together, and whether it is you or Katrina or Patrick or anybody that we talk to, you understand how I do these interviews. I don't do debate or, you know, radio. I find it very old and tiresome. And you know, I take this side, you take that side, Scott. We fight, and what do we get? What comes of it?
Yeah.
Even the big news outlets like Fox and CNN have gotten that people are tired of that. So what I do like to use this opportunity for, though, is to not only pick your brain and talk about some of these things, but discuss bills that don't always get talked about very much. And I don't want to throw a curveball at you, but I you know your job pretty good. So are you familiar with Assembly Bill 300?
By number, no. By title, probably.
Okay. It's the one that involves a tax on election workers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah, okay. Very familiar with that. We heard it in my committee not too long ago here. Yep.
Yeah, and I felt like the story didn't get covered that much. And some of it's understandable. There's so much going on. I'm not trying to I pick on news outlets plenty. I'm not picking on them on this one. I do think, though, it's one of those things that should be brought to attention a little bit more, and we should talk about it a little bit more. And I wanted to get your feedback on this one.
You know why you didn't hear about it at all? is because it's bipartisan, bicameral. Everybody agrees with it. So there's just no meat on the bone for the media.
Right, right.
It's weird, right? I mean, it is a huge bill, and it goes to the heart of what we talked about with elections, and that was why I told the speaker that I wanted this committee. I said, it's not my background, it's not my education, but it's something that I'm passionate about, is making sure that we restore everybody's faith in the elections. Whether there's somebody out there that thought it was stolen, blah, 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 all that stuff. It doesn't matter to me. I want to make sure that everybody feels secure in this process, because we lose way too many volunteers because of all the conjecture that's out there. And when we don't have volunteers working in our polls and volunteers helping with all of these campaigns and everything else, then the system falls apart. So this is one of the bills we have in this committee. I told the authors of the bill, I said, you're not going to hear bills in my committee and campaigns and elections unless you've got a Republican senator, a Republican assembly person, a Democrat senator, and a Democrat assembly person. There's got to be four co-authors on any bill that comes before my committee, because the truth of the matter is, whether you like the place we're in or not with our governor or our legislature, we do have a split government. And to get any of these bills signed, there has to be absolute agreement. So when this bill came forward, we heard it in the committee. We had quite a spirited debate. I think in the end, this bill will get through unanimously out of the Assembly and the Senate, because it came through our committee unanimously. It's a great bill to help restore some confidence for our poll workers to make sure they know that they're safe. So I think, in the end, we're going to see probably a dozen, maybe a dozen and a half bills come out of campaign elections this session that'll be bipartisan, bicameral, that'll actually be able to get signed by the governor, that'll help restore faith in our electoral process for anybody who lost their faith in it.
Hmm. And certainly that part I don't take lightly, but I really was focused on keeping election volunteers safe. Seems a very heavy part of this that I think that is one of the biggest parts of this that should have been covered, I would think, right away. And I appreciate what you said there about the meat on the bone and the not, it's not the low hanging fruit that a lot of the media likes to pull on and go to. I'm curious, do you guys talk about that stuff from time to time? Because especially here in Wisconsin, I think that you guys are making it really hard for people to be able to use the low-hanging fruit of, I just hate the other side just for hating them. I'm seeing a lot of getting along in Madison right now. I'm seeing a lot of purple happening. I don't know if that's really good for the big news outlets out there, man. I don't know.
It is not. You should see some of the stuff they're scraping for right now. And I don't want to point out names of the media, but people will know them who read them. But they are scraping for some really weird stuff. Like, there's a special election coming up down in southeast Wisconsin for an assembly seat that I almost said the name of the outlet in Milwaukee, that could not cover any of the substance of the campaign whatsoever, but had to go back 25 years for an event that somebody attended that was controversial. And the guy's like, well, yeah, I might have been there. Because there's nothing for them to report, because we are doing everything we need to get done in Madison. There's agreement on huge things like the shared revenue, the school funding, the voucher program. I mean, you name it, everything that we've done the last 3 months up until the point of some of these vetoes, everybody was kumbaya and happy and ready to get along. So now, honestly, that the state budget is done, tucked away, put to bed, 75% of what we need to get done is done, I think you'll probably see some more arguing, because people are going to want to try to prop up their next campaign, blah, blah, blah. But the work is done. The things that people sent us to Madison to get done got done, which honestly is not always the case for us in the Assembly and the Senate and the governor's seat. So when the three of us are all getting along together, and I'll tell you, honestly, it's probably more the Assembly and the Senate arguing at this point than it is the Assembly and the governor or the Senate and the governor. So we're all getting along and getting things done. I mean, that's why we call the budget a budget for us all. I mean, we all got something wanted out of it. The governor got to sign it. The governor got to make some changes. The legislature got some very, very big things done. But the only people that can't take much credit for it are the people that voted against it. But still, there are things that people who vote against budgets can take credit for helping with and say, I supported this while I didn't support that. So there's just going to be a lot less fireworks in the newspapers and, TV programs for a few months, which is great, because you're not going to have a shortage of that when it comes to the 2024 campaign, because you've got the U.S. Senate seat, the presidency. I mean, everybody's up in the legislature. So take this calmness and this quiet and enjoy it for a while.
Well, and in that meantime, maybe some journalists out there can get back to doing their job and actually reporting and actually having to do some digging and actually talk to sources and do some real work instead of just reading something they got off the AP or something like that. Maybe we'll see a little more of that, too. I
hope so, because all this gotcha stuff is all, it's finally done. So it's great.
I don't know how much you've had a chance, especially it's only some parts of it have only broken over the last 24 hours. But I do want to talk about in a roundabout way what's going on in Emory with their mayor, with their police chief, with a lot of the resignations that have happened overnight. For those that did not hear, Chad Leonard has resigned as the mayor of the city of Emory, and where a lot of this is coming from. Now, why they did or that is a little of where I want to go more so than I don't want to be too specific with this because there's still details to come out and sort of and there's also a lot of things that we've already covered, you and I. But we have a common theme of something that I bring up with you and all of our representatives and even our police department and our sheriff's department of what we're doing and the younger generation seeing how we're doing these games, politics, police force, any of this stuff, and how many of them are going to want to do the jobs where we see a mayor brought in. The social media backlash, all this other stuff. And finally, at the end of the day, he's like, you know what? This ain't worth it. This is all right. Dealing with all this is not worth it. How are we ever to find a balance with this where we can hold our representatives and our police forces and all this accountable like they should be, but also being able to be like, hey, we're not going to act like children either.
You know, and I talk about quite a bit with you about how we have the greatest process in the history of humanity, but it's messy, which is fine. I mean, the mess is what makes it great. And anytime we see part of the process burn down, there's always a regrowth and there's always something that comes out of it. And it's always this cycle that we talk about a lot is, yeah, it looks bad right now, but it'll grow back. So in those communities, when those things happen, you know, kind of looks like it's, you know, kind of burned to the ground type of thing, you're going to see people who are conscientious step up. It's always my optimistic nature. And it's always, you know, people dig at me once in a while for it. But I always tell people it always works out in the end. No matter what, because whether you think somebody's got bad motives, and we've got plenty of those in Madison too, there's always going to be somebody behind them who says, that's not right. We need to do this better. Mm. So those are some of those people that step up to end up on our county boards, village boards, serving as mayors, you know, all those types of people who in the end will advance into the process and become state reps and state senators and governors and those are kind of the places that I always spend a lot of time with fellow county board members, or city council members, trying to help them learn outside of their realm what the opportunities for them can be. So we're always like developing a bench, like in baseball, right? Yeah. Like a AAA team, like a AA team. We always want to keep those folks and friends close because we're always going to need those people to keep stepping up. So when there's people who are just too intimidated or too, you know, put off by the process and they step out, that's okay. I mean, it's not always meant for everybody. We don't all have as thick of skins as we need to in politics, but that was the way our system was set up, is that if you're going to be involved in politics, there are different rules, right? I mean, you've got to be able to take more heat than anybody else for anything else ever, because our constitution was set up that libel and slander don't even apply to you in the same way they do the regular public. So there's going to be days and weeks and months and years where you just take so much crap from people that you don't think it's going to be worth it. And I've been there. I've gone through that too. But you just have to stand your ground, tell people why you're doing what you're doing, not what you're doing all the time, but why you're doing what you're doing. Those things will calm down. And if they don't and you go, somebody else will step up. It's just the way it's always worked. It's the way it always will work in this process we have.
Agree with you. I if I could just piggyback off of that, I am encouraged also by the younger generation and so many of them getting into politics younger. You've got the young mayor in Florida and situations like that. We've got a couple of stories here in the Midwest of young people getting into politics and handling it, I think, in a lot of the way that most of us were hoping to see politics go and the direction that it was supposed to go all along. And I think there's some encouragement in that.
There always is. And, I always talk about it. There are days and weeks and months, like I said, it's going to just be crap. It's just going to suck. It's just going to be the worst thing you've ever thought you've ever done in your life. But then you know, all of those seeds that you plant, they all start growing. You start cultivating them. You start, you know, processing them. They turn into a final product you can be proud of, and you want that feeling again. Mm-hmm. You want to start planting more seeds and getting more things done. So once you're in it for a while and you see what success can look like and feel like, you want to stay. And then you find ways to make sure that people know the story of the why that you're doing things. And mm-hmm. I think all of those things we're seeing even now in Madison. We're starting to get some of those agreements done, and I think people back home, especially our municipalities, are going to say, hey, that's great. I want to be a part of that. So you'll start seeing more challengers in assembly seats and Senate seats, and you know, you'll see all of these successes locally turn into, you know, good public servants into the future.
Scott, always good talking with you. If people want to reach out to you, talk to with you more, how can they do that?
Yeah, cell phone's always on, 715-323-3293.
Always appreciate the time, Scott. We'll talk more next month.
You bet. Take care.
You too. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine coming up right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.